The True Confessions of Charlotte Doyle, Disc 4.
Part 2. Chapter 13. For a second time, I stood in the forecastle. The room was as dark and mean as when I'd first seen it. Now, however, I stood as a petitioner in sailor's garb. A glum Fisk was at my side. It hadn't been easy to convince him I was in earnest about becoming one of the crew. Even when he begrudged a willingness to believe in my sincerity, he warned that agreement from the rest of the men would be improbable. He insisted I lay the matter before them immediately. So it was that three men from Mr. Hollybrass's watch, Grimes, Dillingham, and Foley, were the next to hear my plea. As Fisk had foretold, they were contemplating me and my proposal with very little evidence of favor. "I do mean it," I said, finding boldness with repetition. "I want to be the replacement for Mr. Johnson."
"You're a girl," Dillingham spat out contemptuously.
"A pretty girl,"
Foley put in. It was not meant as a compliment.
"Takes more than canvas breeches to hide that."
"And a gentlewoman," was Grimes' addition, as though that was the final evidence of my essential uselessness. "I want to show that I stand with you," I pleaded, "that I made a mistake."
"A mistake," Foley snapped. "Two able-bodied men have died."
"Besides," Dillingham agreed, "you'll bring more trouble than good."
"You can teach me," I offered.
"God's fist," Grimes cried. "She thinks this a school."
"And the captain," Foley asked, "what'll he say?"
"He wants nothing to do with me," I replied.
"That's what he says. But you were his darling girl, Miss Doyle. We takes you in, and he'll want you back again. Where would that put us?"
So it went, round and round. While the men made objections, while I struggled to answer them, Fisk said nothing. Though I tried to keep my head up, my eyes steady, it was not easy. They looked at me as if I were some loathsome thing. At the same time, the more objections they made, the more determined I was to prove myself.
"See here, Miss Doyle," Dillingham concluded. "It's no simple matter. Understand, you sign on to the articles, so to speak, and you are on. No bolting to safe harbors at the first blow or when an ill word is flung your way. You're a hand or you're not a hand, and it won't go easy. That's all that can ever be promised."
"I know," I said.
"Hold out your hands," he demanded.
Fisk nudged me. I held them out, palms up. Foley peered over them.
"Like bloody cream," he said with disgust. "Touch mine," he insisted, and extended his.
Gingerly, I touched one of them. His skin was like rough leather.
"That's the hands you'd get, miss, like an animal. Is that what you want?"
"I don't care," I said stoutly. Finally, it was Dillingham who said,
"Are you willing to take your place in the rigging, too? Fair weather or foul?"
That made me pause. Fisk caught the hesitation.
"Answer,"
he prompted. "Yes," I said boldly. They exchanged glances. Then Foley asked,
"What do the others think?"